Hello and welcome to Literary Lunch, a light lunch for your literary appetite. I'm Beth, and today me and my co-host V are joined by Kelly and Jesse from the Library Coven podcast. We discuss The Wait by Donyell Clayton, a short story from the We Need Diverse Books anthology, A Universe of Wishes. If you would like to hear more from Jesse and Kelly, you can find them on Twitter at The Library Coven. Enjoy!
Thank you guys so much for coming on our episode. This is so exciting. Collaboration.
Yeah.
We're very excited.
Thank you for inviting us. Glad to be here.
I really enjoy you guys' podcast. I was just listening to it earlier this morning, and it's fun. It's very informative, and I feel like it makes you... I really like it.
Nice to hear. Yeah, I've listened to a few of y'all's episodes, and it's fun to do the take on the short story. We haven't do that, or I don't do that very often, so it's a great opportunity to do that for me.
Yeah, we were going to review whole novels for the show, and then we realized, oh, we don't have the attention span.
You gotta be honest.
Yeah. Plus, 20-minute episodes.
Good. It's much easier to edit, I'm sure. Sometimes I'm like, I wish we were less time.
Oh my gosh. Especially when we have those episodes that go over an hour long. It's like, oh no. We don't do that as much anymore. That was only towards the beginning.
We had one interview lately that was really long, and I couldn't make myself finish editing it. This was so hard for me because I'm so used to this 20-minute episodes. I'm like, oh, this is going to be done in a few hours. And then now it's like, oh, that times four, and I was like, I can't do this, but I did it.
Congrats.
Did things.
Yeah. As far as the episode is going, I thought we could talk about the story we all read. And then after we have sort of discussion about that, I thought it would be kind of cool if I could get you guys' opinion on young adult fiction as a genre, because you talk a lot about that on your podcast. And V and I actually met bonded through young adult fiction.
Us too.
Yeah. I mean, in our case, it was specifically crapping all over horrible YA series we'd read.
We love to do that too.
There was this one series where it's like this random white girl becomes an Indian goddess by the end of the fourth book.
Oh no.
And she's like, yeah, it's like Twilight, but with a white tiger and a black tiger. And the black tiger's the bad boy and the white tiger's the good guy.
Of course. Oh, wow. It's like too tropey to be imagined.
The audacity.
Wow. The shenanigans that, is this a white author?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
You know,
what else would it have been?
Exactly. I know. Like, for real. Just like, no, this is mine now. I'm just gonna put this on and run with it. Like, really, for real. And then look where we are.
Honestly, though. So today we are gonna talk about The Wait by Donyell Clayton. What are your general thoughts on the story?
Sure. I really enjoyed the story. I thought it was super sweet, and I actually reread it last night just to sometimes I forget characters' names. So I'm like, who are these people? What is going on here? I really enjoyed it. And I really like the idea of first love, which I think we see happen a lot in YA. It's always a first love. No one's ever been through traumatic relationships before in a YA novel. Unless they've for some reason been with a villain. So if Kelly were in a YA novel, her backstory would be she had been in love with a villain.
So true though.
but I really enjoyed the story, and I found it interesting that the characters decided not to see what their test results were. I was shocked because I'd be like, no, I need to know.
I really loved this story. I thought it was tender, and I liked it better on the reread that I did this morning than I did the first time around. I think because I was getting a bit more of the like feeling a bit more of what the protagonists were feeling, you know, like that anxiety, like you really want to know if you're making the right choices, you know, and the pressure to like have someone approve of what you're doing or to like get some sort of outward confirmation that like this is the like right person. And I love that at the end, they're just like, no, we make a choice. Like we're choosing to face each other instead of what this like problematic scientific measurement that's probably like patented in corporate. So like, here we go. I'm getting anti-capitalist and it's like, what, 10 minutes in? It's a red pill.
We did not stand capitalism on this podcast.
So I don't know if that's very coherent, but, and also I just am in awe of the editorial work. I want to say that before I forget at the top, because this is that's one of the reasons why we picked this story, right? Because it's the editor of the collection. And I just think I've read about half the stories and I am just loving it. And this is a book that needed to exist.
It really did. Like, I think, I don't know, like all YA that I read growing up was like pretty white girl does things and gets pretty white boy at the end. Like that's literally it. Like, I remember one time I read this book through, like there was like, an Indian guy and I was like, such a tangent, I'm sorry. And I was like, oh, maybe she'll pick him. And she didn't. So totally irrelevant. But this book needed to exist. I agree. Like, this is like the stuff I wish I could have had like back in the day. But even now, it's like really good to get into. And I also really loved that they looked at each other at the end. My heart kind of melted. And I was like, love is real. Ever since my last breakup, I've been on this love is fake phase, but this was a little bit like, this was refreshing because it was like, you know, if they had chosen to see the results of a test, it almost would have weakened their love because you're giving away the element of, I trust you and I will weather this with you, you know, whatever other people say, we will do this. And I thought that was super powerful that it's just like, it's made, it's not told. And the minute you ask for it to be told, it's weakened already because you're doubting it.
I think what made the ending particularly effective for me was that we actually got to see the test results beforehand as they were calculating them. And then it adds that tension of, oh my God, they're falling out of love. What's happening? Oh, this is going to go terribly. And they're like, you know what? No. And I'm like, good choice. I think if I hadn't known the results, there would have been that tiny part of me that's like, this is a cop out.
And the results were like the opposite of what I thought they were going to be. So like Grace is the one who has a new love, even though Marcus is the one who's kind of thinking about like, what would it be like to be with someone else? And he's the one who's like, kind of seems to be like falling out of love with her. So they've like made this decision, which, full disclosure, I married my high school sweetheart and like we went to different colleges for a year. So like this story was like particularly like close to my heart, even though I didn't know that was the case going in, just because it's like, I do think sometimes you have to like make those decisions on a day-to-day basis to continue to be with someone and continue to love them. And I like that this story showed that like, it's a decision you make. It's not just like what we sometimes see in YA novels where it's just like, you meet a person, you fall in love, and then everything's fine all the time, forevermore. Like, that's just not how real life works.
And it's like faded and in the stars and everything.
Yeah.
I appreciate what you said, Jesse, because although I did not have, like, I didn't have very many relationships in high school or anything. And then the person that I ended up getting married to was like my first serious relationship. So I kind of related to this in the way, even though we weren't like firsts really of anything necessarily. And then when I came like out more fully as queer, like knew myself better, but that wasn't like, that was later into our relationship, you know? So we had already chosen each other. And so there was like some, you know, conflict and growing pains and stuff like that. But it's also like, you can keep making choices to be with people and like expand the parameters or reject that sort of like hierarchy of what the scientific method is trying to impose on the hearts, you know, when they're weighing them, right? I'm a bit more of a relationship anarchist myself, I guess, because like way my love for my dogs. Oh my God. Like you would not even believe.
That would be your deepest impression is just our pets.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was just like, that was one of the things that really struck me about, what if wondering about being in love with somebody means I'm not as in love with this person, or what if I doubt my love or whatever? And it's just, I was just going, what about polyamory? What about loving lots of people in different ways? What about having very deep friendship bonds that are not like not romantic, but like just as important? Like I have friends in my life that are way more important than like any boyfriend could have ever been for me.
Yeah, I think like the corporation side of this is also almost trying to impose the idea that love is cheapened if it's, you know, spread across multiple people, which is super tragic. And that is how you put your whole world in one boy and get your life shattered. Self. Like,
I was gonna be like, yeah, you will.
I mean, you know, we live and we learn. Like, you have to love a lot of people, and love is powerful the more of it you have.
Yeah, rejecting this like scarcity mindset that capitalism imposes. And this,
yeah,
this seems like a little bit of like a techno future.
Absolutely.
Because imagining being able to like have your heart surgically removed and then put back in or something, and then like it seems like people come back and do this more than once. So wow, that's just it seemed like almost if you had taken the idea of like a 23andMe genetic testing and like kind of ran with it or something. I don't know.
Would you guys undergo the procedure? And I'm curious to hear what you guys have to say, like each of you.
I feel like in a moment of doubt, like you would really want to do this, like me as a person. I don't know why I'm saying you. Let me just put this on to someone else instead of talk about myself. But I definitely would not, because what if I don't want the other person to know like answers? Like I don't want them questioning me. Like I'm doing the questioning. They can take their heart out and let me know what's going on with them, but they don't need to know what I know about me. So no, I'm not doing it.
No way I'm giving some corporation access to like that sort of stuff. Like, you know that they make you sign some waiver and you're giving away like your, you know, seven generations down the line something. I don't know.
Like the targeted Facebook ads. You'll suddenly get targeted Facebook ads for like,
oh my God.
For like weddings, yeah, or couples therapy, or like, do you want to adopt a dog now or something?
Oh
like,
God.
Oh man, that relationship escalator, but funded by like the corporate, like, you know, by this vision of what's necessary in the so-called United States. Man, that is that's a overwhelming propaganda force for sure.
Yeah. First comes love test, then comes marriage.
Then comes baby in a carriage. You know, all that being said, I honestly, like, I see why someone would do this. Like, it's not an alien concept to me that someone would say, I am thinking of spending the rest of my life with you. I'm thinking of getting serious with you. And I want to know, like, on the table, what is up? Like, I see how that can prey on your insecurities. And if that exists, it's like an option you're not taking if you don't do it, you know? And it's like there's a way to sort of know, I mean, by some weird metric that capitalism decided or scientists or whatever. But like there's like some metric and there's a way to sort of know something or think you know something. And it's like, oh, I'm choosing not to. And that could be equally scary in a world where, you know, that becomes standard is like everyone does it. So why, like, you know, so like it's almost normalized. Why be the one to sit it out when everyone goes and does it over and over, you know?
And then it becomes the question of what do you have to hide, huh? Surely you don't care about your proprietary personal data more than you care about our love.
Well, and I think sometimes I feel like we see people like having shorter and shorter like relationships before they get married. And maybe that's because like, I think divorce isn't as scary now. Like parents have gotten divorced, like lots of, you know, you just see it a lot, I think maybe in our age group. So it seems like less of a big deal, but I feel like you see people who are in relationships for shorter amounts of time before they get engaged and get married. And that might also lead to you wanting to like do something like this because you're like, well, I've only been with this person for a year. Like, how well do you know someone in a year?
I mean, this is
let me just make sure that this isn't like a serial killer or something, you know?
Was to have
that would be my fear.
So that just tells you where we are here.
Beth, do you want to tell them about your proposal?
Yeah, so my husband and I had been talking about getting married in the distant future when he graduates from grad school. And then my sister was like, what if you married him for the healthcare? And I would, if I were your boyfriend, I would want to give you healthcare. And I was like, oh, haha, honey, guess what silly thing my sister said? And he was like, well, why not?
Voila.
And then 10 days later, we were married.
And you know, you guys had like the best wedding photographer ever, so
I'm guessing that was UV.
Yes,
but I mean, it was kind of perfect because then we didn't have to like invite anybody we didn't want to, because it's like, oh, it's the pandemic, we're eloping.
Perfect timing.
It was great because at the time I could barely work my camera, and I spent the entire time being like, I don't know if this is actually taking pictures or not, but don't worry, it probably is. And totally not stressing the bride out by like mentioning that, but that's a lot of trust.
I knew you had it.
I don't even think I had that much faith in me. I was like, I hope this is in focus. I'm just going to keep clicking.
That's beautiful. Friendship. Ugh, love
it. No, the morning of, we were getting ready, and Theo was like, it's fine, Beth. You'll be on time. You'll be on time, even though you still have to go pick up the rings. It's fine. And I was like, okay, I trust you. And then meanwhile, she was like turning around, taking a huge like pull to her face, like...
Stress.
See, you have to keep the bride calm on the wedding day. Like, it's a must. So I was like, Beth, I have this planned. We're going to be on time.
This is fine.
And she was like, okay, we are. And I totally didn't fucking know. So.
V, I see in our notes that you wanted to talk about your friend's opinion on divorce, a tangent.
I do. Speaking of divorce.
Hey, don't say speaking of divorce right after I'm talking about my wedding.
No, not that.
I mentioned divorce.
Jesse brought it up.
Speaking of the prior topic of divorce.
Right.
So I have this friend, and so I don't know. I was always... You know how you're raised reading books, watching TV, where you end up with the one, and that's like, if that works out, that is great, you know, and that's amazing to love someone and grow with someone for like that long of a time. But I think like almost one of the things that is implied by this corporation kind of commodifying having one love is just the fact that it's like, it doesn't account for the fact that love is messy and things can't change someday, you know, where it's like, it's not necessarily a fortune telling tool. If you are super in love with someone and you like get your heart taken out of your chest and you guys are like, I don't know, ready to love forever. But, you know, life is messy. Someday something happens and then it's like harder to say, let's get a divorce, because like, 5 years ago, your hearts were beating in synchrony, you know, under the lights of the surgical theater or whatever. But like, and actually one of my friends has an interesting perspective on divorce, because she thinks, she said that she's going to get married to someone that she wants to have kids and raise kids with. It's just like her way of looking at it. And she wants to raise kids with this person until she's about, you know, until the kids are in college, until she's about a certain age. And then she's like, and then I want to divorce them because I'll have grown as a person too much to be with them. And then I want to find my real life partner that I actually want to get old with. Because she, like, in her mind, the person you want to raise kids with and the person you want to get old with are different. And she's like, you know, marriage is from a time when life expectancy was lower and no one had to spend that much time with someone. And it's just so interesting to me because, like, I've always, like, been sort of conditioned to think, like, it has to be one person, you know, and you have to make it work. And this is almost, like, challenging them to say it's now or never. And it's very sweet when they look each other in the eyes at the end and they say, you know, whatever these test results say, it's now, you know. I thought that was really cute.
I really like that perspective, I think, because I mean, me and my partnership, we're not having children. Like, that's not something we want. So for us, it's like a decision to just like spend time together, but also with the thought in our head, like, if we had to get divorced, it's not that big a deal. Like, mostly we're like, who's going to get the cat in the divorce? And of course it's me.
Obviously.
That is the biggest like argument. It's like, who gets the cat in the divorce? But like, I think it's a really reasonable perspective to think like, I want to raise kids with someone, and that might not necessarily be the best person to like have a romantic relationship with, because like raising kids seems like a ton of work that like I don't want to do. And if you want to do that with someone, like you need someone who's responsible and like not spontaneous probably, and like has a good job. And like, maybe that's not exactly what you want in a partner. Like, maybe you want someone who's like super fun and gonna go do like wild adventures with and travel and stuff, not necessarily things you can do when you're like having children. So I think your friend real smart, knows what you're talking about.
You can have your cake and eat it too. Like, why the fuck
exactly
not, you know? all the rules yeah. are made up anyway.
But it's like, even like their emphasis on like, no, he's the only one, you know, is like, I've definitely been in that mindset before. So like, I get it, you know, where it's like, no, I'm going to end up with this partner. And then, well.
My husband and I do this book every night, and it has like little questions. It's like a book for couples. And the one of the more recent ones was like, do you believe in soulmates? Which I think is perfect for like this, for this story. Like, do you believe in soulmates? And my answer was like, no, but it seems like it's a very nice idea. You know, like I like the idea of it, but I don't believe in that. But he took the question to mean like something very different, where he was like, I do, in the sense that like you choose to be with a person like every day. And so like you've made a decision to be with that person, and that is what makes you soulmates, as opposed to like, it's fated to be. And I kind of feel like,
oh, I like that interpretation.
I know. His was real sweet. And I'm like, no, yeah. Fuck off.
That's not surprising to me at all. Just this like romantic ideal.
Of
be like,
get out of here. I don't know. Thank you.
Which I think is really sweet. And yeah, I don't really buy into the idea that you have one person you're fated to be with for the rest of your life. I think sometimes you get together with someone when you're young, and sometimes you grow closer to each other, and sometimes you grow farther apart, and that's just life, and you got to do the best that you can.
And it kind of shows that like believing in soulmates, or like having an idea that a specific person is your soulmate, could be very limiting, like in what you feel like your options are, like to leave or to stay, or to, you know, try something with someone else, or try even a new way of having a relationship. Like having that like one person, like it also like limits people who might be interested in polyamorous relationships. Like, is one person their only person? And then who is this other person to them? You know what I mean? So that can be like really limiting in what people's possible.
And that's another thing that I wanted to mention, that our conversation has kind of brought up for me, is the like also that love is really complicated and both conditional and unconditional in different ways. Because like people can be in love with their abusers, for example, you know, like it's not always necessarily like a good thing, you know, it can be, it can cause a lot of issues.
Yeah, you're totally right, Jesse. And in a way, if you do have that moment that this corporation set up where your hearts are beating in synchrony under the lights, you know, and you're like, oh, you're meant to be, and this is perfect. I feel like that's also bad for you in a way, because then no matter what happens, you have that to look back to, where it's like, you know, you can justify a lot of things and like, oh, things are going really poorly now, and I don't know. But remember, like, our hearts are perfect for each other. Yeah, you're right. It's like this high point you can never reach again, almost, like when you see that or get those results. So it's like it screws you over almost.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I think, oh, go ahead, Kelly. Grace, I think, mentions like a couple of friends she had that had done the test, and like two of them were about, like one of the couples was about to break up, and then another of the couples had been fighting ever since, but like hadn't broken up yet, which makes me think that it said that they really loved each other, but they're fighting and like their relationship's not going well, but they've decided to stay together, maybe because of their test results, and maybe that's not what's best for them. Just because they loved each other so much then doesn't mean they need to stay together. Like, you can love someone and also realize that they are not good for you, and maybe you shouldn't stay with them. It reminded me of To All the Boys I Loved Before. You know how the sisters like do not go to college with a boyfriend. I don't know if y'all have read that or seen that, but okay, then you're not that far into the movies.
No, I've seen both the movies.
There's one more. There's another one coming out.
Oh shoot! February. There's a third one.
Yeah.
Oh my god. I low-key loved those movies. They actually really helped me get over my ex because I don't know, something about them was just like so wholesome, so wholesome. That was just like, yeah, I don't know, very charming movies.
That's a good, maybe a good segue into like why we read YA, if you want to talk about that. Or one of the reasons, I think, can be like these aspirational, like love interest figures, you know, or the like exhilaration of like vicariously experiencing enemies to lovers, for example, you know, there's like all these fantasies, right? And then YA gives a place to like play that out. Yeah, I don't know. That may be one of the reasons, because it is like that strong, like, especially in the like typical Sarah J. Maas or whatever you want to, like Tamara Pierce, like who, you know, those, this white lady canon basically of YA fantasy usually has that figure. And then I think it is revealing that all those authors share certain identities, so, and are trying to like push certain agendas. So
anyway. And I think sometimes and like in addition to that, people also forget that like young people coming up and reading these stories, like they haven't read these tropes 1,000 times like we have. Like, these books are not really written for us. And while I love them dearly, like I love them so much, like young people haven't read them before. Like, these stories are new to them, and they're just reading like fake dating, they're just reading enemies to lovers, they are just like being introduced to like these magical worlds. And like, they are so lucky, I think, that they get to see so many like different perspectives that like I didn't get growing up. But I think it's part of the reason I love reading YA is because you get to feel like these big emotions. Like, I'm not gonna feel the feelings of first love ever again. Like, it's already happened to me. Like, I'm done. Like, I can't do it again.
Oh yeah.
Like, all of those firsts, like, it's over. But you get to kind of like relive those when you're reading YA fantasy, and kind of get to see like how values have changed over time. Even like, I mean, I'm not very old. I'm only 31. But like, even in that short period of time that I've been reading YA, like, you can see values changing. Like, you can see an acceptance of queer characters. You see more diverse voices. Like, we're seeing, like, I just read Midnight Sun by an Indigenous author.
Black Sun.
Oh, yeah, Black Sun. Why do I keep calling it Midnight? Oh, that's a...
Oh, Stephanie. That's the Twilight one.
Yeah, gross. Okay. I did read that too, and it was trash.
You DNF'd that one though.
Yeah. But like, I just read the Rebecca Rowan Horse Black Sun, and it was like so amazing. And we haven't read that many books by Indigenous authors, and it's just great to get those different perspectives. Mm. And I think I also like YA because it's less like when we read The Poppy War, like it was just so violent. I was like, even for me, it was too much. With Kelly Knows is like saying a lot.
Because Jesse really likes these violent TV shows.
They're great. But once it's in a book, I'm like, okay, that book had like mass genocide going on.
Oh, and yeah,
like,
that was, yeah.
There was
that
a was, lot and
that was a lot.
A whole big like content warning on that book. But like, I just love YA. It's just fun to experience firsts, I think.
I think that it is related to the like the pleasure and the joy of it too, right? That it's not as much of a fucking slog to read. Like, don't make me work so hard. This is fun, you know?
Yeah, I think a lot of people who were like really avid young readers did it because they had something they wanted to escape from. For me, I had a really isolated childhood. I was homeschooled. I didn't really get to see a lot of people, and I just spent a lot of time like in my house. And when I was reading these books, I was along for the ride. I was going out and seeing new places. I was experiencing new things. And it also like had this really important message, I think, that YA gives, that implicitly teenagers are important and they do matter and they can do really impressive things and wonderful things. And I think that, I don't know, we really have an obsession with hating on teenagers a lot of the time. Just like, oh, teenagers are so moody. Teenagers are, just leading their sheltered lives. I don't know. But with young adult fiction and fantasy, it's just like, nope, you matter. Your feelings matter. and you can do all of the wonderful things you really want to. And I think that's so powerful.
Yeah. Like, I remember, back into the history of V's life. I did not have many friends in middle school and high school either. So I was kind of a little bit alone, and I would read these books and I don't know, man, I wasn't talking to boys at that time. I wasn't doing this exciting stuff. I wasn't saving the world. I wasn't having my first kiss while flying in the sky. But I could read about it and it was whoa, this whole new world that I hadn't experienced yet just opened up to me. And I was someday I'm going to kiss a boy, someday. But and it's I don't know, at that age, it's I didn't even entirely notice the tropes you were saying, because it was all new territory and it was just more exciting than my life, and also kept me together because it gave me, something to love, something to be excited about. Yeah.
Bethy, what you said really resonated with me too. I had a similarly isolated childhood. Didn't feel I belonged or people understood
me. No, you guys were great.
You
know,
all that
inky
stuff,
but
it's
so
really
fun.
Real
I
and really isolating in YA fiction and specifically fantasy. Yeah, gives you all these options and says there's magic for you, and that's great. And I am, Jesse, what you said earlier reminded me about this, or I think you mentioned this earlier, but just it's incredible that people that age now have access to books like the one that we're talking about. It's just,
I love it.
It just is so much more, the world is more magical now, I guess, for them because they have all these books.
Right. So I like that as a, stopping point, is talking about the magical addition to the world. Thanks for coming on.
It was super fun.
Thanks again for joining us for this episode of Literary Lunch. Again, Jesse and Kelly can be found on Twitter at The Library Coven, where they have lots of wonderful tweets, and you can find their really excellent podcast. And as for me and V, you can find us on Twitter at LitLunchCast. And if you would like to support the show, you can donate to our coffee at ko-fi/literarylunch. We will see you again soon. Thanks for joining us.